welcome back to Melchior Talks, a Wheel of Time Theory podcast. I am Rob, your host, and today we are continuing with the special part two of the recent First Time Theories recording with Null. On Friday, I released chapter 13, and today, as promised, I am following up with chapter 14. So let's just dive straight in. On to the stag and the lion. So this is quite a lively inn. It's, it's fairly full. Master Fitch explains that as soon as winter had cleared enough, men from the mines and smelters in the mountains had descended, and all the inns in Berlon are the same. And with the men come some horrible tales of wolves and worse. Now, knowing what we know, based on what we've been reading... Yeah, wolves and worse.
So Trollocs.
Yeah.
And... oh my god, names of things I've forgotten.
Murderal Fate. Yeah, it's so many names for that character. Like Trollocs are just like Trollocs, and some of the others are just have singular name for Shadowspawn, but Murderal seem to have a different one in every country. It's quite entertaining, but I was wondering if you picked up on that. I didn't on my first read through. I just was just like, oh, you know. I was like, what, bears as well, I suppose? I just didn't twig on Trollocs.
If you read a book and then after every sentence think about if you need to make a note on it, you pick things up.
Excuse me. Yes, that is fair. This is the joy of being a first-time reader that's reading slower for a podcast because you then analyze every sentence. I probably read this in half a second and was just moved on. So, yeah, I'm glad you picked up on that. Master Fitch looks at the group once or twice, Rand, Matt, Perrin, and Egwene's clothes, clearly marking them as country folk. Tom's colourful garb makes it all seem like a strange group to be accompanying Mistress Alice and Master Andra. Again, say those however you'd like. It does seem like a weird group, doesn't it? We know that Master Fitch has met Moraine and Tom, and they've reappeared with some country bumpkins and a gleeman. Interesting situation for the innkeeper there, I feel. But Moraine has asked Fitch about the Children of the Light and their presence. He just brushes it off, saying they claim an Aes Sedai is in Berlon, and in his opinion, he thinks they are trying to get inside the walls by showing off some poor woman. He says most people know what they're up to, and they support the governor. So this is your note about being confused in the last chapter where you thought they were one and the same, but we've crossed that bridge.
Are they sort of like guards or like army sort of thing?
You get more detail about the White Cloaks later in the book, and I don't want to... Not that I feel it would be a giant spoiler, I just don't want to give it away because it kind of ruins their proper introduction.
Okay, no problem.
Yeah, like you get some nice details. In fact, you even get a little bit more than what you've already got, I'm pretty sure, in the next chapter. So, it becomes clear what their purpose is and how they work and such. So we've crossed over that confusion, which is good. Moraine asks after someone called Min, saying she would like to speak to her. Rand, is any thoughts on Min there before I carry on? I heard it.
It's the little bit after where I was kind of had more thoughts the actual encounter.
Okay, cool. All right. We'll talk about the encounter when it pops up. Rand is unable to hear her reply as a man and a woman appear and lead them off towards the baths. Rand tries to ask Ara, the man who's leading them to the baths, about Berlon, but he doesn't really reply. And then they all get naked and bathe. Why did I say bath? They all bathe.
Fan art.
Yes. I'm sure there is some fan art. There's definitely some appeal in the fandom for seeing some butts in this scene. They were like, give us the bath scene. We want to see some butts. MK, I'm sure, who's listening to us, will be like, I want some butts. Give me some Barney Harris butts right there. So who plays Matt? But yeah.
Jesus.
But yeah, so they ask if they're asked if they need anything else. That's the first thing they've said since they've took him up to the bus. Tom's like, no, thank you. Go enjoy the rest of your evening. We'll recompense you later. Ara takes a good look at the belongings, eyes lingering on the bow, Rand's sword, and Perrin's axe, and asks if there's trouble down country in the rivers. Matt tries to point out it's the two rivers, and Rand then interjects by asking, is there trouble here? And aside from basically the miners fighting, there's not been much. He's just heard of strange things in the mountains. Trolloc Saladair before... I think you've missed a word here in your notes again. So Ara tells them that other than miners fighting, there hasn't been. He has heard of strange things in the mountains. Trolloc Saladair, before snapping his mouth shut, seeming surprised that he'd said so much. Do you mean like Trolloc down from Saladair?
It might have been Trolloc in.
In? Oh, Trolloc in. Okay, cool. I mean, that's possible, yeah. Okay. You've noted that he seems surprised that he said so much. Is that just you just kept summarizing the point there, or was there?
Yeah. I think it was okay. Because he snaps his mouth shut. It's kind of like, oh, crap.
Cool. Matt chortles, opens his mouth to tell Ara about their experience with Trollocs themselves, but others quickly shut him up. What do you think of Matt's just... Matt's just kind of a bit of a loose tongue at the moment here, isn't he? Just like, oh, well, let me tell you about Trollocs. Like...
I'm just imagining the room and everyone just starts shouting and trying to say something over the top as he's still saying it.
It's like the, you know, the verbal version of the kick under the table type moment, isn't it?
Yeah. And he doesn't get the point, does he? No. This is a brilliant thing. He doesn't get the point.
He is like, clearly Barf's, Matt's kryptonite. Put him in a bathtub, and, the brain disappears, and he just la, 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 talks about anything and doesn't understand. So, but Lan walks in anyway and stops all of the confusion in the conversation, kicks Ara out, and then tells Matt off for his stupidity. So, rightly so, I think. Rand thinks Ara knew of some trouble that he stopped himself from telling them about. What sort of trouble do you think it might be?
Well, I'm wondering if there's something more closer to home. Not their home, but as in where they are. Because his reaction was either, I shouldn't be talking, it's not my place. Mm-hmm. Or because he doesn't really know who they are, he feels like giving too much away and he should shut up in case they... I don't know whether they have allegiance to whoever, but it certainly felt like he cut himself off before he really said what was going on.
Yeah.
And it does make me wonder whether it's a stature sort of thing, whether he feels like he's placed to comment, or whether actually, because he doesn't know them, he doesn't know their allegiance.
What sort of, do you have any idea on what sort of trouble he might have talked about had he felt he could have talked about it? Like, is this
I don't know. Trouble? Like, Trollocs turning up and kidnapping people or burning houses down? The general sort of thing.
just the casual trouble that happens every day. Yeah. Okay, cool, you know. there we go, your next note does help that early one with like Trollocs in Saldea, because you put Lan tells them Trollocs are always at the borderlands. That was must have been just the word in that we've missed there, but so once they finish Moraine, they find Moraine stood at the end of the corridor with a girl. At sight of the Moraine said something and the girl rushes off.
I assume that was Min.
Okay, I was going to ask if you had any ideas who the girl was, so making the assumption that is Min. Cool.
Yeah, and I just thought it was interesting that she kind of whispers to her and the girl zips off.
Why has Moraine sought this person out? Any ideas, possibly?
No bloody clue.
No bloody clue.
He hasn't described the girl very much, I think. Or
I feel like we get pretty much a name, and that's kind of it, don't we? So
yeah, it's just a small girl at the side and kind of hidden by the shadows, I guess, in the corridor, and they kind of briefly see her before she just vanishes. So she's obviously been given some sort of task, or has been asked to do something for her.
Okay, so she's kind of like being sent off on an errand, or is reporting on an errand she was asked to do, perhaps.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Moraine then leads them off to a private dining room provided by... you keep writing Finch, but it is Master Fitch, so I'm going to keep saying Fitch.
and she talks. It's probably autocorrect.
It probably is
because it hates me.
You wait till you start throwing out some of these other words later in the books, and it'll be like, "What do I put here?" You'll just get some sort of random collection of letters.
the amount of times I've had to try and say Moraine word.
Hey, it's spelling it correctly in the. Do you dictate these, or are you typing these?
No, I've gone to typing that.
Okay.
Because dictating was horrendous.
Right.
I basically had to rewrite each sentence.
Oof, not fun.
Whenever there was a new name or word, a misandral just sent it into some sort of meltdown.
Misandral. Oh, that is, ladies and gentlemen, that is canon for this episode, for this podcast now. Misandral. I like that. Okay, well, she's talking consequently with Hitch as they go, acting as Mistress Alice, you've put here. In the dining room, they find Egwene warming her hands at the fireplace. Rand having thoughts about how few people they can trust during his bath, and deciding that because Moraine had said that touching the true source would have happened to her anyway, he can think of her as the same Egwene as always. And then, I love your comment here, he is such an idiot. Goes towards her to apologize, but then as he approaches, she turns her back, and he decides, instead of apologizing, he will be even more stubborn.
oh my god,
it's like fucking high school right now, isn't it? Like
it was so painful to read. It was so painful.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm an incredibly socially awkward person. I'm very uncomfortable most of the time when I'm not in a small room by myself. But I would not have acted like that.
No, I feel like most people would have been like, hey, no, don't run, in some manner of speaking, paraphrase it, don't run off, I need to talk to you. And then...
not even that, but the bit before, he has to justify a way for himself to look at her like the normal person she is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like...
he has to create a reason.
Is it just safe to say you're not liking Rand at this point?
Yeah, I think so. It's not dislike, it's he annoys the hell out of me.
Right. He's frustrated.
Yeah, it's like you've gone to somebody's house and their kids are running around and that one kid just will not stop hitting you with the little truck. And you like the kid. The kid's fine. It's just that thing he's doing is so annoying that you want to hit him. But you're a socially normal person, so you don't do that.
That is going in the quotes at the end. Rand is that little fucking annoying kid with a truck that won't leave you alone that you still like, but get frustrated by. I like it. Yeah, that's a good, I like the analogy. That's hilarious. Love it. And it's a very good point as well. He is just, yeah, it is frustrating to see these interactions here with Egwene. And as we've said, to not be, to not allow his view to expand and grow. Well, the innkeeper arrives with four women and they set the table with food. And the innkeeper basically stumbles over himself, apologizing for the meager offerings. It's clear he genuinely respects Mistress Alice here, and you wonder what the history is between them. Do you have any?
Yeah, I don't mean that in a sort of saucy way.
Oh, I hadn't taken it in a saucy way, actually. Ooh, hello, Mr.
As you said it, that's where my mind went.
Do you know what? Tomorrow night, when this comes out, it'll be far past. But tomorrow night, I'm doing a like a Valentine's Day relationship thing. I'm going to put Mr. Fitch, Innkeeper Fitch, in the mix, just in case we pull Moraine out at the same time, and then we can give them a little saucy back history sort of thing. So
I think you'll find if you read my notes, it's Finch.
Finch. Oh, sorry, Mr. Finch. Okay. Being serious for a moment, is there, what's your prevailing theory of their history here?
It made me think that this character she's portraying herself as, it's well built. So there's a longer history than just these brief interactions, because you can already assume that she's been here before, as it's said, and then gone off and come back. So it makes me feel like there's more than just that, because he's almost groveling in the way he apologizes to her.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he stumbled over himself to apologize, didn't he, basically? So
he's not, it's not just like, why is he producing that sort of, trying to produce that sort of meal? If it's just someone fancy who's turned up, who he's got no prior ties to, really, he might apologize, but I don't feel like it would be such a apology.
Okay. So, yeah, there's some sort of, it's like, there's a much stronger relationship between them in terms of what, in terms of their interactions over the year. It's not just a case of like, oh, I casually stay at this inn if I go to Bailon.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a stronger professional connection there. Okay, cool. And then maybe tomorrow night there'll be a stronger personal connection too. I will let you know. You can't watch. It'll have spoilers because we'll talk about the whole series. But
I just assume whenever you say anything that I can't watch it or listen.
Hey, I send you stuff when I'm like, you can listen to this. This is good. and once we get to like chapter 30 or something, there will be an episode of The Dusty Bill that you can watch, because it will be me acting out a scene from that part you will have just read. I think it's chapter 30-ish. So in what, like next Christmas? Wait, couple of chapters a month. We're on chapter 14 now, 16 chapters. Yeah, 8 months. Yeah, so yeah, be a Christmas present. Love it. So back to the chapter, Rob. As they're eating, Moraine asks Lan what they've learnt. And everybody listens up.
What he learnt.
Yeah, what he learnt. And he's learnt very little. You've put Avin was right here. What was...
I assume that's autocorrect for... Yeah.
Ara. I was like, what's his name? I forgot already. Yeah, so he was right. There was a battle in Gildan, and Loghain was the victor. There are a lot of variations on the story, but they all have those things in common. Moraine asks for any news on the Aes Sedai, and Lan says no one seems to know. And then finally, Lan does give them some good news. So far, there's no talk of strangers, so no Misandral, as we've christened it here on this podcast. And Moraine tells everyone they'll stay for 2 nights and then leave the following morning. Pretty simple stuff there. I don't think there's anything too big to dive in. Just the battle there at Gildan and Loghain being the victor.
Yeah, again, it's kind of drip feeding me a little bit, but doesn't explain it well enough for me to really know what they're talking about.
Yeah, they keep teasing this Loghain Gildan battle and you know, bits that go in with what the peddler was telling us earlier down in
Emerson. Yeah.
So. We'll keep that on the back burner and see if we get any more drip feeds in that situation. But Rand's next dream. Do you want to take us through the dream? Like your post-it notes, your bullet points here. There's a few. it's kind of like a step-by-step for the dream. But yeah, take us through the dream. And
I think we can sort of shorten it down. It was just as I was reading it, I made the points so that I could keep track.
Yeah, well, I mean, you do have a thoughts section on the dream in your notes, so we can, yeah, literally just sort of summarize the dream in a way, and then we can dig into your thoughts on it, can't we?
Yeah, yeah. I think, so the overall gist is as the night ends, he goes to sleep and wakes up in a dream. Can you wake up in a dream?
Lucid dreaming you can, in a way. So.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, we'll say he wakes up in a dream. Yeah, that works. Why not?
And he's in a stone hallway, a really long corridor. It's very dim and shadowy, but there's some sort of light source that you can't really see. like light coming from nowhere. There's water dripping off in the distance. He's struggling to really know where he is or be aware that this is a dream, I guess. And he eventually starts heading off down the corridor with doors lining both sides periodically. Eventually he enters he opens one of the doors that appears along the side and enters the stone wall chamber. The arches open up out into a balcony, and the sky is never seen before. The clouds are black, greys, reds, and oranges. They stream past. Looking at the room, it's just as odd as the clouds, weird angles and columns that grow out of the grey floor, flames in a hearth.
I would say half, but you know, I know what you mean.
I think it is half.
Yeah.
Give no heat. And the stones that make up the fireplace are strange ovals. When he looks at them, they appear wet. But then when he moves his head away and just sees them out of the corner of his eye, they appear to have faces writhing in anguish, screaming silently. There's a table and chairs in the center of the room. And they appear to be the only sort of normal looking things around. He notices a mirror on the wall. And when he goes up to it, the reflection is a blur instead of his own. Although everything else around him looks normal, or as it should, which isn't, I guess. And he suddenly notices that there's a man in front of a place dressed in dark clothing of fine cut, who then begins to speak to him. And I don't imagine you want me to go through all of that, because it's a very long conversation.
Yeah, I mean, the sort of the rough idea of it is basically saying like, oh, we meet again type thing. The biggest thing about him is you put eyes and mouth that become openings into endless caverns of flame. So it was quite an interesting bloke to meet.
Okay, so there is a couple of things in here. So Rand initially had moved down that corridor after hearing the dripping because he realized he just wanted to follow the sound. But when he gets here, the guy eventually offers him a drink, and he suddenly feels the thirst well up.
Yeah, you've got to hear like he offers offers a drink, and he's like, he must have said like, you must be thirsty or something at some point. But I am a little. He picks up the goblet. The man leans forward, watching. The smell of spiced wine makes Rand aware of just how thirsty he is. But then he stops, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really torn because, well done for stopping. But there's a guy in front of you that, when you look at his eyes or at his mouth, they open to what is essentially the gates of hell.
Yeah, I agree.
And he says, do you want a drink? And you're just like, yeah, all right, I'll pick that up.
Yeah, it's... what the fuck is the only thing you can think of reading that section, isn't it?
I don't know what to say, but yeah, let's continue because it's painful.
Yeah, we'll continue. we'll dive into your thoughts. So obviously Rand puts the goblet back down. I'm not really as thirsty as I thought, causing some disappointment. Asks who the guy is. Some call me now have we crossed this word before? Have I asked you to try and pronounce
it? If I say yes, will you say it?
I'm going to say no in that case, and I'm going to ask you to say, some call me what, Null?
I'm going to say that is Baalzamon.
Ding, ding! Nicely done. Ooh. Yeah, some call me Baalzamon. And it's close enough as far as I'm concerned, so.
Or it could have been Baalzamon.
So he tries, he's obviously that freaks him out and he tries to get away, but he can't. And he's asking, like, you know, are you the one? You can't hide from me forever. You can't hide from yourself. Not on the highest mountain or in the deepest cave. I know you down to the smallest hair. Stalker alert. You know, Rand hasn't been looking. He's been trying to get out the door at this stage, but he turns around. Are you expecting glory, power? Did they tell you the eye of the world would serve you? What glory or power is there for a puppet? The strings that move you have been centuries weaving. Your father was chosen by the White Tower, like a stallion roped and left to his business. Your mother was no more than a broodmare to their plans. And those plans lead to your death. Shall we just...
Do you want to unpack... I think we should.
Do you want to continue, or do we want to unpack that sort of
section? No, I think maybe we try and unpack that, because all of a sudden... you're kind of thrown a lot, and it's obviously not very clear yet, but there's a lot in there that can be taken out.
Yes.
So initially the thoughts are that he assumes Rand is further along in his Rand's journey than he actually is. And what I mean by that is, he kind of assumes that Rand's already been welcomed into the fold of the Aes Sedai, I guess, or under their protection.
Hence the, are you expecting glory, power? Did they tell you the eye of the world?
Yeah,
there is a sense from the words that he's using that he thinks Rand knows something.
More than he does.
More than we know he knows. So let's go. First off, Eye of the World. This is obviously the title of the book we're reading. So this is the first mention of that phrase. Did they tell you the Eye of the World would serve you? Like, what is?
I'm going to assume, and you probably won't correct me if I'm wrong because you're evil, but I'm going to assume that the Eye of the World refers to the One Power.
Okay.
That it is like the, almost like how we might refer to Mother Earth.
Right.
Yeah, like drawing power from that central point.
Okay. Next line, or next few lines. I'm not going to, I'm just listening to your thoughts now. This is nice. So what glory or power is there for a puppet? The strings that move you have been centuries weaving. Like, so he suggests that Rand is being controlled, I suppose.
If we remember, or if I should say, the prologue, there is the conversation about how the two of them have fought many times over and over again throughout the turning of the wheel.
Yes.
I think he is referring to this idea that these things happen again and again.
Okay.
That they're, although they may not be the same, the exactly the same, the general sort of actions are repeated, good against all this sort of that fight. Might take different forms, but it can. So I think he's suggesting that this, all of these little things happen, then being led this way is, it's written in the fate, and it's going to happen the way he thinks.
Okay. There's an implication here with the next set of lines that his birth was kind of planned by the White Tower.
Yeah. Okay. And so, what is the White Tower?
Okay, that's the first question. What is the White Tower? Okay.
I feel like it's been mentioned before, and I'm just being stupid.
I'm struggling to remember that now as well.
It's not.
Chat, help us out here. Have we heard of the White Tower previous to this? I don't want to tell him if he hasn't heard.
It's not to do with the Aes Sedai, is it? Oh, as in, like, it's not been mentioned, as in that's where they're being taken. It's kind of what's in my head reason.
Okay. Well, chat is we're uncertain in chat.
Okay, so let's assume
we haven't heard of the White Tower, just to be
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Okay. But you think this is kind of where the Moraine is taking the group anyway, then? Is that what you just said?
Well, no, it was just I'm trying to extract the information
okay
from what's been said. But that sentence anyway leads you to assume that Tam, as I have sort of said before, he was someone important, and he'd been chosen by somebody to do the work of whoever. Mm-hmm. And this guy is saying, well, tied up like a stallion or a horse and made to do
yeah.
the business, and then I guess put out to pasture.
The two rivers is pasture. Okay. Yeah, it's definitely a paragraph that just gives more questions than answers, doesn't it? So
yeah, the next one though. So I don't know whether I'm trying to read too much into it. Is it to me, it kind of only saying that is it referring to his mother as in birth, as in the person on the side of the hill?
As spoken about in
Tam's dream, which I am taking as to being real, because okay.
All right, so for the purpose of this, we're taking that as real.
Or is it referring to the person that Ran would have thought of as...
Right. Yeah, I see where you're going here. So is it his birth mother or Kari? Well,
yeah.
Okay. Do you lean either way?
Yeah, I'm kind of assuming that it suggests, if we take my belief that the dream talk was actually real, things that happen, that he's sort of saying that, you know, she got pregnant,
okay,
child, purely so that Tam would take it, and then Ran would be in this position.
Okay, so I mean, that fits in with the centuries of weaving going on to in the whole puppet conversation. So, all right, cool. Rand pushes back, obviously, saying he has good parents. And we get a whole lot of names dropped on us now. So there is some spirit in you after all. Perhaps you are the one. Little good it will do you. The Amelin seat will use you until you are consumed. Just as Diven was used, and Yuri and Stonebow, and Gwere Amalson, Robin Darkspain. I love that. It's oh god, what is his actual name? It's not Robin, and it's not Batman either. I can't remember his first name, but yeah, Darkspain. Just as Loghain is being used until there is nothing left of you. So we've heard the name Loghain before,
right? Loghain is the I'm going to refer to as the false dragon.
That is the as we're calling the false dragon that was referenced in regards to the battle in Ghildan and stuff.
Yeah.
So knowing that Loghain is, the false dragon we're calling him, does that lead you to have any ideas about these other names mentioned?
I could take it as the fact that he is just listing all of the people in the steps that sort of have been pre-planned, and this is, you know, they all have a part to play in getting to the point we're at. Yeah, it seems a bit odd to reference somebody that is supposed to be false. Although it says he's been used.
Yeah, it says he's been used. The other names, thank you, chat, by the way. Raolin, Raolin, Darkspain. Ren and Darkspain, they've all been used, and obviously he's saying the Amelin seat is going to use Rand as well. So,
I mean, I took this with a huge pinch of salt when I read it, because quite clear he's a nasty guy.
Okay.
And
so when you say pinch of salt,
yeah, I'm suggesting that even if some of the things he is saying are true, the way he is saying them is not.
Okay.
Whatever he is saying is with an agenda to try and manipulate Rand.
Okay. So there's like enough truth sprinkled into this.
Yeah. So
horrific conversation to just try and manipulate Rand. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. I don't know what, because I don't know enough about the individual people or names that have been dropped in this sort of sentence to really understand more, other than the fact that, okay, potentially they are being used by the what I'm going to call the good side, but I don't think that necessarily means anything, because everybody uses everybody in some to do whatever.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Okay, cool. So he's just sprinkling out enough truth to get Rand doubting.
Yeah, I think that's the agenda, is to force Rand into going, oh no, these people are bad, or those people are bad, I shouldn't trust them.
Okay.
Even though he's talking to a flaming eye guy.
Flaming eye guy, I like that. All right, cool. So Rand's struggling to keep up with that, and he starts talking about how he's bound. You are bound in Shal Ghul, you and all the Forsaken, bound by the Creator until the end of time. Which gets Balzamon laughing. It's like, the end of time, you live like a beetle under a rock, and you think your slime is the universe. The death of time will bring me power such as you could not dream of, worm. And then, you know, he starts to say it again, you are bound, and he's like, fool, I have never been bound. I stood at Luz Theron Kinslayer's shoulder when he did the deed that named him. It was I who told him to kill his wife and his children and all his bloods, and every living person who loved him or whom he loved. It was I who gave him the moment of sanity to know what he had done. Have you ever heard a man scream his soul away, worm? Oh God, this goes... I didn't realize how long this bit went on.
Oh, yeah. And I would like to... When you get to the end of this sentence, I would like to...
Yeah, we'll just finish the end of this sentence and we'll unpack that bit and then we'll go into the rest of it. So he could have struck at me then. He could not have won, but he could have tried. Instead, he called down his precious one power upon himself, so much that the earth split open and reared up Dragonmount to mark his tomb.
At this point, I think I would have just gone, oh, shut up. Like, I'm reading it and I'm going, there's a lot of information in here, a lot of things to look at. But also I'm going, if I was Rand, I'd have just gone, oh, Jesus Christ, man, shut up. Maybe in different words, because I imagine Rand speaks different than that, but that would have been the message.
There would probably have been an expletive in there or two.
I just, you've got some bad guy, I'm going to say, in front of you, wittering on about how great he is, and you know, I'm so powerful.
He's a monologue.
You just tell him to shut up. You just, I know it would annoy him and probably make him really angry, but it's better than listening to him try and tell you how important he is.
Yeah, I'll be taking... I know we've said previously that... just before that, you're reading this with a grain of salt, that he's just sprinkling enough truth to make Rand question things and not trust people. In this monologue section, do you feel like that is the case? He's being more truthful, less truthful?
I think he believes he is that great guy.
Oh, okay.
And that everything is his. And this is like you say, a monologue, but it's one from
delusions of
his own ego. It's his ego talking, and he's going, oh, look, I am so powerful, you are a worm, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, he really thinks, you know, this is an important lesson he's teaching Rand.
Okay. Do you want to dig into any of the other specifics he talks about? You know, sending Trollocs south, ravaging the world, shattering nations, whispering in Arthur Hawkwind's ear, things like that. Do you want to dig into any of those, or do you feel like it's just him monologuing? It doesn't really... You don't think...
Okay, so, well, again, remembering the prologue, I sort of remember the last sentence of that previous sort of speech bit a bit differently. So he puts it as he called the One Power down and split the earth to mark his own tomb.
Yes.
And I seem to remember it being more like he, it's kind of what he did, but it was more of a until the time's right, less of a marking his own place of death, and more of I felt at the time like it was more of a now is not the right time. I can't fix this, and sort of strategically retreating.
Right. Okay. So what happened to him then?
Well, I don't know. It was Luz, wasn't it?
Luz, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of took it as because of this idea of cycles and things forever turning that, you know, even if he had have, he, I took it as he turned into the mountain or the mountain consumed him. Right. But that this idea of it being passed on to somebody else to do what needs to be done.
Okay. So almost like he realized, I can't save or I can't defeat this evil right now, so I'll...
It's almost like it's time for somebody else sort of thing.
Right, okay. So what was the purpose of making Dragon Mount then?
I don't know.
Okay.
It's cool. No, I don't. That begs a good question. Like whether it's to stop the Dark One from getting.
Right. Cool. I mean, it's a whole weird section, isn't it? There's a lot of like, you know, where is this going sort of thing. We get what appears to be in the second half of this monologue, like a history or something, don't we? Like a description of stuff over time.
Yeah, the second part where he's talking about his interference in what happens in the world, how he's been guiding.
Yeah. My question here, obviously, you know, it's his ego talking, he's monologuing, you know, touch of salt and all that. Do you feel that this is, are we getting his version of history? Is he just making shit up on the spot?
I kind of took it as he was probably saying what's happened.
Okay.
He's picking out random events, isn't he? Obviously, they're things of importance.
Yes.
And a big thing, but he's picked out select few and then using them to sort of push the knife edge in. Uh-huh. He's making that point well known in the context of good and evil. We are, you know, you have the rational good side that tells you what you should be doing, and you have the darker side that sort of whispers in your ear and tells you maybe I should just instead, and that's kind of what I see as this is they may well be true, and it's just he's been that nagging voice in the back of certain people's heads what they shouldn't have done.
Right. Any of this going to be relevant in the rest of the story, or is this only relevant now?
Well, it highlights his ability. And this could be very important, especially with a group of people traveling where you have differing views on things, or people aren't all on one side. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think the group is, are they? You've got three lads who don't really know what's going on and don't really trust the people they're with.
Yeah.
You've got a young girl who has essentially joined the ranks straight away of people that are leading them, and whose mind is very much now in the case of the Aes Sedai are good people, and these are who I want to be with.
Right.
So you've got that, those differences already.
Yeah.
And it would be very easy for somebody to come in and use those to create more problem.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of fits in with the end of the monologue. When men such as these could not stand against me, what chance do you have? A toad crouching beside a forest puddle. You will serve me, or you will dance on Aes Sedai strings until you die, and then you will be mine. The dead belong to me. So it does kind of tie in there where you say he's trying to just manipulate Rand to be, you know, and it's like I'm mentioning all these moments from my egotistical view that are just kind of like saying, well, I control them and you're not like them at all. So, you know, I'll control you too type thing. So that does tie in from your perspective there. It continues on, Rand talking about dreams. Balzamon tries to, well, he doesn't try to, he demonstrates that Rand is not safe in dreams. And we've got a rat instead of this goblet. Balzamon curls his fingers, the rat's back arches, and it continues until basically we get a snap, a violent tremble, and a dead rat. Quite an unnerving description, or a bit of a scene there.
Yeah, it's pretty horrible, really. I mean, it's a dream rat, I assume, but even so, yeah. Poor rat. Nothing wrong with rat.
Yeah, is there anything can happen in a dream? His hand hurts from hitting the door, but it still won't open. So, yeah, I feel like he's just trying to terrify him with more power here. You didn't like my monologue, so here's a...
Yeah, he's intimidating him, isn't he? He's doing his best to really scare Rand.
Yeah, definitely. He tells him to go off to the Aes Sedai, go to the White Tower and tell the Amelin seeds of this dream. And as he laughs, there's heat hitting Rand's face. And then that is one way to escape them. They will not use you then. I assume you mean, have we missed a point in notes here?
So he's telling Rand to, must have skipped a bit, I think. Yeah, I think it was just that Rand was telling him, bloody hell.
I thought you read this recently. Okay.
Yeah, I did. This bit wasn't even that long ago. Bear with me 1 second. Rand swallowed. Anything can happen in a dream, he mumbled. Without looking, he swung his fist back against the door again. His hand hurt, but he still did not wake up. And then I haven't missed anything because literally he then goes to the Aes Sedai. I think this bit is basically Rand still trying to escape. It's like, well, okay. Look, if you're not listening to me, go on, go and tell them what's just happened. Because then they won't use you. They'll toss you aside, sort of thing.
Right. Okay. I was just checking I hadn't missed something in your notes here. All right. So basically saying if you tell them about this dream, they won't want to use you type thing.
Yeah.
Okay. The ashes of many like you are scattered on the slopes of Dragon Mount. Creepy. Rand muttering, this is a dream. It's a dream. I'm going to wake up. Will you? The man points a finger at Rand. Will you indeed? The finger crooked and Rand screamed as he arched backwards. Will you ever wake again? And then Rand jolts up in the darkness and he's awake. Definitely nightmare material.
Yeah. I'm not sure I would have gone back to sleep.
No, I mean, it does take him a long time to go back to sleep. His mind's turning over what's happening. But I don't think I would have slept after that dream, to be honest. So,
and the bit there... So he spends a lot of the time before he goes back to sleep turning over whether he should trust the Aes Sedai in Moraine.
Yeah.
Even from his perspective, I think... Like, I'm not saying I would... If in his place, I would trust her explicitly. But I don't... I think the things she has done so far appear to have been through a genuine motivation to... keep them alive.
Yeah.
And that deserves a certain level of trust in return. Mm-hmm. I think at this point, when you're faced with evil, scary, fire eyes guy, or...
I'm just going to put that in the notes.
Okay, maybe slightly scary. She threatened to kill you if you just wandered off. Lady... but who has also helped multiple times you and is trying to save your life.
Yeah.
I wouldn't spend too much time worrying about whether I should trust her.
Yeah, valid. So you've got a few summarized thoughts of the dream and the chapter in general. So you've put, I may not be popular for this opinion, but Rand is very annoying. I find myself wincing at his interactions with Egwene and hoping they just avoid each other. Rand's a farmer. He's worked the land of his dad almost certainly since he was able to. That includes tending to crops. Yep, okay. I was going to ask that. So tending the crops, animals, and repairing equipment. To me, that suggests a level of maturity and self-awareness that Rand, as a character, so far hasn't shown. He's immature in how he deals with things, except for the Trollocs, and when Tam was sick.
Yeah, there was a brief period where all of a sudden he became very focused and very like, you know, my dad's really ill. I need to fix this situation. And while maybe rushing back into the house wasn't sort of, you know, that well thought out. He just kind of did it. He was quite careful in what he did, and I guess the term is mature. But other than that, there's so many little things where he doesn't act as I would expect someone from that background to act.
Yep. Fair. Number two, this includes his reaction within the dream, muttering to himself like a rabbit in headlights, not to mention actually thinking about having a drink from the goblet is dumb as fuck. He engages with the quote, man, when it should have been fairly clear that this isn't right, and lets him witter on at him for what was probably a long time. Where is his backbone? Tell him to shut up, for God's sake. And we kind of touched on that, didn't we? So I feel like we've covered that fairly well. Point three, that being said, his inability to stand up for himself does mean we learn stuff. We learn a lot of stuff. There's a lot of exposition. A lot of monologuing. Number four, so he's definitely being chased down by the Dark One, firstly in an attempt to claim him, but if that fails, I think the Dark One ultimately will just try and destroy him. Probably what this mindfuckery is about. Either do what I want, or I'm gonna make you afraid of everyone.
Yeah.
Very fair. Very fair thought process there. And last one, I'm thinking that the Dark One is afraid of the Aes Sedai. He spends a good amount of time trying to build the doubt in Rand's mind about who he can trust, and then doubles down on it, I think, hoping he won't talk about these visits.
Yeah, it was that last little bit about sort of, oh, well, go and tell them then.
Yeah.
Kind of like that, where you tell someone to do something to get them to do the opposite.
Oh, reverse psychology.
He's doing that, isn't he? He's like, oh, yeah, well, go and tell them, you know, see how they treat you, sort of thing.
And do you think Rand's going to fall for that? Like, is his stubborn nature the type to be like, well, you've told me?
100%.
So... Okay.
He's going to keep his mouth shut, and it's not going to be good. I mean, I genuinely don't really know how I think they would act if he goes and tells them.
Right.
Whether they would continue to help.
Aes Sedai in general or Moraine?
Well, Aes Sedai in general.
Okay.
And I think there's, like we sort of touched on, I think there was elements of truth in what was said. Mm-hmm. Maybe, well, we already know that the reason they're being led there is because she's trying to protect whichever one of them is the person of importance that the Dark One was after. So, and she's already threatened that if there's a chance that the Dark One takes them, she will do what she thinks she needs to and kill them off.
So following on from that statement she made, if he told her about this dream?
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult to tell, isn't it? Because part of me is saying, well, you know, if he went and spoke about it, maybe maybe it's not as cut and dry as like, oh, well, you know, he's already got his grasps on you, so I'll kill you. Maybe it's more of, we need to know this because we can actually do something about that. we can protect you in, you know, in protect your mind or, you know, your consciousness or whatever. But I don't think he will say anything. Okay. And maybe he should, but actually, I guess there is that doubt in the back of my mind of, would they just bump him? Because by telling them, he is narrowing down the fact that it's definitely him that the Dark One's after.
Right. So you think that might stop him saying anything to Moraine? Because if he does, then she's like, aha, you're the one he wants, as opposed to it's one of you and I'm not sure.
Yeah. Okay. Also begs the question of what would happen with the others, because she's only taking them all. Well, she's taking Egwene because Egwene demanded it. Yes. And she saw a spark in her. And as things have progressed, now looks like she's taking her so she can be trained. But she's only taking the three boys because they didn't know which one it was.
So
that the...
my question then, if Rand goes to Moraine and says, hey, I had this dream, and I don't think it's a stretch to be like, well, clearly you're the one he's after. Do you feel she would drop the others and just be like, right, okay, you guys can go home now?
Potentially, yeah.
Okay, cool. Lovely. We did have a question from chat as well. Quite an interesting one. Oh yeah, this is a cool one. So it sort of stemmed from MK saying like, oh, I hope this scene is in the show. And then Zor sort of doubled down on that, be like, yes. And they want to know what you think about this scene, this dream sequence. So I believe specifically, should this be in the show? Like, what are your thoughts about how this could be put on the television screen, so to speak?
So do I think that dream sequence should be a part of either an episode? Well, it'd probably have to be an episode itself, wouldn't it?
It depends how long this dream goes on for, doesn't it? I mean, you could summarize some of these points, but I mean,
I think yes, I think it should be. I think it's an important, unless the only way to not have this in would be to create a totally different scenario where Dark One has this interaction. Because although I sort of have said that it's a long-winded and stupid monologue that should have been shut down, it was important to open Rand up to what's going on, and therefore us.
Okay. So should it just be like roughly this dream? Do you think they should keep anything specific in the dream? Like, you know, keep the rat dying bit, keep the goblet bit, keep the monologue, axe the monologue? Like, do you want all of it?
I think most of it should be in there. I think certainly the interaction with the goblet and the rat. I think the goblet will have people who watch the show going, you're an idiot, which means that I'm right. So I like that idea.
Okay.
And the rat highlights this sort of attempt to control Rand. It's a show of power in a subtle way. Well, not so subtle, but in a small way.
Right.
I certainly think they should have most of that in, because a lot of the conversation is building that mind fuckery.
Yes.
And if you cut bits of that out, it wouldn't work.
Okay. So where my mind process is going now, so to speak, is we, from like going off what you've predicted so far, especially with your double down prediction at the end, as for predictions, I think so far the only one I can double down on is that Rand is the true dragon. This dream seems to cement the idea that both I am the dark on thinking.
I am the dark. I am the dark.
Okay. But yeah, so you're doubling down that he's the true dragon.
I think it.
My question, sorry, to goes on. So that's our perception as we've read so far. Is this a perception that we should be giving in the TV show? So considering this is chapter 14, like, or you want this in, like, and people be like, well, he's clearly the dragon then. Or do you want some sort of mystery, I suppose? Does this give away too much? That's kind of what I'm asking. Does this give away too much to a viewer? Because it doesn't give anything away to the rest of the characters. We're aware of that. Because they're not seeing this and you've predicted he's not going to share it either, but would this give away too much to a viewer? Would it spoil the show?
No, I don't think so, because I suspect that going forwards, it's not just going to drop this on us like, oh, well, you probably all suspect it now. So, yeah, he's the dragon. It's an ongoing thing, isn't it?
And okay.
I think it would be fair to have this kind of drop. If you've been watching a TV series, and while I imagine that they're not going to do it an episode a chapter, you know, you're maybe five or six episodes in, or three or four, and you've been following a main character for most of it, you're pretty much going to be aware that that character is important.
Okay, so because, in some way. Yeah, because you're expecting the TV show to focus on Rand like the books does, that Rand being the true dragon, as we're going with, is not an unbelievable thing to drop mid-season.
I mean, it would be interesting to see how they did a series based on this, where Rand wasn't at least mostly us. A lot of this is a journey with him.
Okay. So you'd almost like it if the TV show didn't focus on him as the main character then?
No. What I'm saying is, like, I struggle to see how they would make it seem like all the characters are on a level playing, like the...
Right, yes.
The path with... Unless they cut out the Tam and the farm and the Trollocs, okay. That bit. That's all Ram. You could do parts of it from the perspective of a Tam, but it's still going to be the majority of things happening to him.
Yeah. Okay, I see what you're saying. So it's hard to keep it. Yeah, as you say, if you focus on one character, it's hard to then make it a surprise that, hey, they're like the major character of the story. Like, this is the big thing, like, that was...
I mean, brilliant if it's the perspective of a Trolloc for the first four episodes, and then that Trolloc is the one that gets killed by Rand.
Just have like Narg. Can we have some Narg POVs in the TV show? Wraith, I know you listen to the podcast. He's the showrunner, by the way. Null. I know you listen to the podcast, Wraith. As does Sarah Nakamura, obviously. You know, they and she's like the book consultant, so clearly they listen and clearly they're curious what we're saying. Can we have some Narg POVs, please? This is what we want. Let's prove that, you know, he's not just a guy who cooks, you know, a Trolloc that cooks in my kitchen occasionally and hangs out with over a cup of calf. Let's give him some POVs in the TV show. I love that idea.
The farmhouse scene rewritten.
Yes.
When Rand walks in to collect the things, the Trolloc is stood there slowly making bread.
I'm going to put that down in the prediction section. We get a Narg POV. I love that. Cool.
Jeez.
Right. So what are the next chapters? This is something I've not done before, but I feel like it's fun. So I think it'd be interesting for you to maybe give us a couple of fun predictions based on the next couple of chapter titles, if you feel up to
it. Okay.
So chapter 15 is called Strangers and Friends. Any sort of big thoughts about what might happen in that chapter?
Okay, so first of all, full disclosure, I have read about three pages in
to the next
chapter.
Oh my god.
All that's happened is he woke up and realized everyone else has buggered off and left him.
Okay.
And the start of a nice interaction with the cook in the kitchen.
Right.
So the title is Strangers and Friends. I expect this chapter to be he goes out potentially maybe looking for them, trying to work out where on earth they've gone to. Mm-hmm. And there's a bit more interaction with the people in the area.
Okay.
Hence the strangers part.
So just sort of some interaction in Baelon between people he does.
Yeah, I feel like
we get like a day on Baelon type scene then. Is that what you
Yeah, he's going to kind of meet some people.
Okay.
What the interaction there will be, I'm
we'll
too sure.
Out, yeah. All right. And yeah. Chapter 16 is called The Wisdom. So any ideas what might happen in that chapter?
Oh.
I mean, if you've got Not the Foggiest, that's okay. I'm just, you know, just being curious.
Is it fair to assume that everywhere has a wisdom?
You tell me if that's fair to assume.
Well,
so are you suggesting they're going to interact with a wisdom of some kind?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's kind of where my head would have is going.
Right. Why would they be interacting with a wisdom?
Well, they're sort of like the voice of the people, aren't they? They're kind of a sort of a leader, although they're not.
Okay.
So,
so they need to see a wisdom for advice?
Some wisdom.
Some wisdom, okay. Hey, well, you know, this is, you know, it's fun. Right, so so chapter 15, we're, you know, chasing down friends and meeting strangers. And then chapter 16, we're off to see the local wisdom.
The wizard.
Off to see the wizard. Okay, so they're on the yellow brick road. Oh, God, that should... Okay, all right. So who's Dorothy? Let's do that quickly. Who's Dorothy? Who's lost in the story? Who's the... Well, Rand's the main character, so I feel like Rand would need to be Dorothy in that respect then, sort of lost in the story and being guided.
I mean, you could equally go with either Perrin or Matt, couldn't you? Because both of them very lost.
Yeah, okay, true.
And certainly Matt with what he says.
Who doesn't have a brain? Who's the scarecrow?
Matt
with no brain. Yeah, Matt's the scarecrow. Who needs courage? Who's the cowardly lion?
See, we've not had that much interaction. I feel like Perrin's been spoken about less than Matt or Rand. Oh, well, certainly Rand, but Matt has come up quite a few times. Perrin doesn't say an awful lot.
Okay.
I don't think Egwene needs courage. I think she's, you know, it takes a certain amount of courage to go, I'm going to go and do something different. Mm-hmm. And hell no, you're not leaving without me.
Okay, so trying to think now. What's the woodsman, the tin man? Who's tin man? Who needs heart? Is it heart he's after?
Maybe a Lan, I want to say.
Lan needs...
That's wrong, but that's kind of the closest in my head.
Yeah, okay, so Lan, chat agrees with you, by the way.
I think he's not a horrible person. He's not in need of heart, but he's quite cold in the sense that he's very focused on what they're doing. And he's you know, he's protecting Moraine, and that's what he's focused on.
Okay. We'll find someone for the Lauer, the lion in the moment. Moraine, Wicked Witch of the East, West, I don't know. Galinda, the witch at the beginning, be like, right, go on, fuck off down this yellow bridge road, you know, like, just go on this journey. There we go. Is it Galen? I don't know. Belinda? I think it's Belinda is the name of that witch, isn't it?
I don't know.
Okay. Glinda, chat's giving us all sorts of names now. I'm loving it. Anyway, that nice witch at the beginning. And because we don't have anyone else, we'll put Perrin as the cowardly lion for the moment. Because we don't really have anyone else to put that. Bella is Toto. I love that. Thank you, chat. That one's great. And Egwene can just be, I don't know. Egwene is just hanging out. I don't know. We don't have anyone for Egwene. We'll try and find someone for Egwene. But yeah. Awesome. What was your favorite bit about these two chapters? That's going to be my last question of the episode, I think.
I enjoyed on the journey that they started training. And it's not a big thing in, you know, in the chapter. It doesn't really talk about it that much. But the idea that they are you know, slowly becoming more than they were. Mm-hmm. You know, and they've all got these individual weapons. And they, you know, they might be able to wield them a little bit, but they're not
They're not professionally comfortable trained.
With them. Yeah. And they're slowly being shown, actually, you know, each of these is very good, and this is how you use them. And I feel like it's going to be very important, that moment.
Cool. Love it. Awesome. Well, I think we can tie a little bow in the end of that chapter there. And in this recording, I think we've done really well. What have we recorded? Just over 2 hours. Brilliant. Kind of perfect. But yeah. So thank you for listening wherever you are to Malky Talks. I would love to hear your feedback about today's episodes and Null Sports or any episode we've done, full stop. So please feel free to reach out via email, malkiatalks@gmail.com. You can join the Discord server, which is where we sometimes record live, or you can find me on Twitter @MalkyrieR, where you can also find my Wheel of Time-based dad jokes that I have christened Tam Jokes. If you enjoy cooking or narrations, please subscribe to the YouTube channel, again called Malky Talks. And if you want to support my content so I can continue to create, please consider joining my Patreon family. Huge range of benefits available there, up for grabs, and some wonderful people you can interact with. All contributions go towards improving the channel. Null, thank you for joining me again. Hopefully it's not another 4 months until we record. That was...
6, 7, yeah.
6, 7. We'll see you before Christmas, at least. We'll say that. And until next time, all you wonderful listeners, may you always find water and shade.